Welcome to episode 45 of Booty and Bossy Eat, Drink, Knit. We have a wonderful recipe that it's in and of itself, it's a small recipe, but you can add it to so many things. It's basically a condiment. It's balsamic onions.
Yes.
And I am not an onion fan, as we know, as we have discussed. However, this one is definitely winner, winner, onion dinner. It's so good on a variety of dishes. You can put it on your salad and have it with some roquefort or some feta and bacon and eggs, maybe. Or you can put it in a grilled cheese. My daughter lived the grilled cheese version.
Good.
That was really, really good. Put it on a quiche. I actually just had made a regular quiche and then just topped it with the balsamic onions, but you could put it in your quiche as well. That would be really good. You can put it on flatbread, make a little fig and goat cheese and balsamic onions. So good.
Yes.
Bossy, do you want to take us through the recipe? This is a bossy recipe.
I think I first had it in a sandwich. It was a balsamic onion and chicken sandwich wrap that this great little restaurant in Worcester, Massachusetts, the Corner Grill. It was our favorite lunch. If I was at work, somebody would go over and pick up sandwiches at the Corner Grill. Sadly, they're no longer in existence, but I just remember the first time I had this sandwich and being like, what is that? Because it was the grilled chicken with the balsamic onions and then lettuce, tomato. I think it had some cheese, maybe a little bit of bacon. I asked the woman who owned it, how do you make these? And it's really simple. Basically, I usually use an entire sheet pan, preheat the oven at about 425 degrees. I usually put the rack on the lowest because you're cooking it at a high heat fast. I chop up, I usually do about four onions. Once you make a batch, if you're going to go to the trouble of making a batch, then you might as well have some. And like I said, I used to put them in when I was making lunch for my son. I'd put them in his sandwiches. That made him very happy. You can put it in salads, but basically 425, you chop up onions, four red onions, however many you think you can reasonably fit on a full sheet pan. I usually chop them up thin, like maybe about a quarter of an inch. You could go to a half an inch if you like more of a bite in there. Spread them out on the pan, put a glug of olive oil in, rub that around so that all the onions are coated in the olive oil. I'd say at least several tablespoons, depending on how many you have. I don't think you can overdo it on the olive oil. And then you put in similar amount of balsamic vinegar, rub it around so that all of the onion slices are sort of coated in olive oil and the balsamic vinegar. Generous sprinkling of salt and pepper to whatever you taste. I usually put it in the oven for about 20 minutes and then I take it out, stir it around. You'll see that some of the edges might get a little caramelized and stick it back in the oven for maybe about another 10 minutes. I like it to be pretty concentrated and so I tend to cook it a good 30 minutes at a high temperature. I think if you wanted more of a bite, you could maybe cook it for a little bit less time. And then it's going to cook down a fair amount. I mean, you're going to have a full pan of onions when you put it in, and you might have only maybe a cup and a half. Cook it down, you know, it looks like a lot, but it's
Much like balsamic vinegar, once you start, after you've cooked
right.
it.
And yeah, and the balsamic vinegar, I mean, it infuses the onion, but it also kind of disappears. So I usually, right when I take it out of the oven, I put another couple of tablespoons on just to sort of moisten them again and get a nice fresh coat. And the pan is still hot, so even then, some of it will disappear there. But you'll have a nice cup and a half of this wonderful condiment. Like I said, the husband and I got sandwiches at our local sandwich place, brought them back, and stuck balsamic onions on them. That's so good.
It is so good. These are actually pretty sweet, and you're
Yes.
not adding any sugar, but it's the balsamic vinegar that gives it a wonderful flavor that's just a little acidic, but mostly it's a sweet, and it's so good. Definitely worth trying. And I have a little tip about cutting the onions. I've
Yes.
talked about this before. I found this video. Gordon Ramsay cuts onions this way. I'm sure there are lots of other people that claim that it's theirs. But anyway, you cut the onion through the root as opposed to cutting off the top and then cutting it. And that way, when you cut it through the root and then you're cutting it perpendicular to that, so you're having the onion and then you're slicing the half. And if you keep that root intact at the end, or half root intact at the end, that keeps the onion together so that when you're cutting it, it doesn't just fall apart and you get, how you get like, well, one piece is cut and then you're sort of having to recut a whole bunch of things. So I love doing it that way. It makes it much, much easier. Some people claim that it also makes you less apt to cry. I don't think that's true.
Yeah, that well, it does allow you because it's kind of being held together. It allows you to cut the slices more thinly, right?
Yeah, we should mention too, this is where I don't think we've talked about this. You really want to have sharp knives. I know people think, but if they're sharp, I might get cut. And it's actually, you're way more likely to get cut by a dull knife than a sharp knife.
Yeah, one good chef's knife. I pretty much use the same knife for everything. And I have one of those little hand sharpeners. And after I finish using it, I'll just sharpen it up 10 times through that little thing. It's much easier to keep a sharp knife sharp than to sharpen a dull knife. So that's a good little kitchen tip for
Yes.
making your balsamic, and it makes the whole kitchen smell again like that onion, something good is coming thing, And even if, well, mom used to call it a honeymoon salad, let us alone. Hi, mom.
Hi, Mom.
But if you've got your balsamic onions, it takes the humble let us alone honeymoon salad and makes it into something you're like, ooh, what's this?
Yes. If you're looking for it, a while ago, I put on our website a delicious balsamic vinaigrette, and I'll put that in our show notes again. So,
So good.
yes.
So definitely make a batch of the balsamic onions and just try it on a bunch of different things, and you will enjoy it very much. I think it will become a staple. I pretty much make it every time red onions are on sale, and I can buy like a bag at BJ's.
Have you ever tried it with yellow or white onions?
I've done it with yellow onions. I don't really buy white onions, but I've done it with yellow onions, and it's really good with that too. I think the red onions are prettier, and I think red onions are supposed to have a milder flavor. But yeah, fabulous with yellow onions too, whatever I think you like. So definitely try it. It's fabulous. Yummy, yummy. In the tummy, in the onion tummy. Well, Booty, I think we were going to continue our discussion of Anne McDonald's No Idle Hands, A Social History of American Knitting. You might remember that we made it through the circle of domesticity in the 19th century. And Westward Knit, knitting on the Overland Trail. And we are now in chapter five. Five and six go together because five is knitting for the blue, And this is Civil War knitting on the Union side. And then chapter 6 is knitting for the gray, Civil War knitting on the Confederate side.
Yes.
So
very interesting. Well, we have do the trumpet sound.
Da, 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 da.
More socks.
Yes.
Socks, 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 socks. I mean, I knew that in World War One, that's when the Kitchener stitch was invented, and because of the need for a grafting on the toe of the socks so they fit better in the boots, and that the trenches were very wet, and so
right.
socks were important. So I knew about it from that, but I had no idea that prior to that it was such a big thing.
Yeah, I think the whole sweep of American history can basically be summarized in we didn't have enough socks. I mean, that, remember the Revolutionary War? I've actually written a haiku that encapsulates this phenomenon. So here it is. Cold, bare, naked feet. American history. Never enough socks.
Drops mic.
Drops the mic. Because it's true. She opens her chapter with "Send socks," pleaded Civil War soldiers, and their heartrending stories of bleeding, frostbitten, and blistered feet reached the North. But it was true in the South as well. And this is the thing. If the women on both sides, if it had been up to them, they would have been like, you know what, we're just going to nip this in the bud. Okay, we'll figure it out, because the amount of knitting we're going to have to do to keep our men folk in appropriate socks is not, I mean, both chapters just talk about how women are just constantly knitting. And I think for the Southern women, the difference was they did not have the same kind of raw materials, and they didn't have the organization. And that's one of the big things that emerges from this chapter, is just the North wins in part because they're better resourced and they're better organized. They have an infrastructure for right. that organization to take place.
Right. The one advantage it seems the South had was, and I don't know if you could call it an advantage, was proximity to the troops. So they were able to deliver their socks more and other things, which I think we're jumping around a bit. But the woman who,
yes,
she goes to the pharmacy and gets a bunch of aspirin, I guess, or whatever narcotics she needs, and it puts them in rolls in her hair, which apparently was the fashion at the time, according to her.
Yes.
And then she puts 22 pairs of socks in the pockets of her hem. I don't know exactly how that works, pockets of her hem, but I just have this vision of her swooshing out these rolls in her head and these socks in her skirts.
Like it's a scene from Monty Python.
Right, exactly. Or that yes. Carol Burnett where she does the Gone with the Wind.
Yes.
And the curtain rod.
Yes. Yeah, that was Lucy Nicholson Lindsay of Missouri, who wrapped drugs that she basically took from a local pharmacist who agreed to step out for a few minutes. And she got together the quinine and the morphine and rolled it up. And then with the 22 pairs of socks, she navigated the lines with her bounty of stockings and narcotics. Here she is to save the day. That was so great. I love that moment. I mean, I have to say, the Southern women, do you remember the scene in Gone with the Wind where Scarlett makes the...
Yeah, that's what Carol Burnett is making yes. fun of. She makes right. the dress out of curtains, and Carol Burnett comes down with the curtain rod in the...
Right. She tells the story of another woman who made a dress out of umbrellas, including the spine part of the umbrellas, and then the, I don't know what you would call it, the thing inside the thing. Yes. The inside was mosquito netting.
Would we say crinoline?
It was like the lining of it, but it's the yeah. lining that makes it puff out.
Right. Like the the hoop skirts and the
Right.
yeah, the whatever, the underskirt, I don't know. But yeah. So she used the frame of the umbrella in the skirt and then also the mosquito netting. Gotta love it. Oh, and fastened with the buttons of an army officer.
I mean, they reused everything. They gathered up any blankets that any household could spare, and they unraveled them and used the yarn again for socks. I mean, they were
Right.
just using everything that they had, and I don't think you see quite that level of recycling in the North, because they just had access to more materials and things.
Yeah, and I love when it said it was a common salutation of the day to say, "Come, bring your knitting and spend the day."
Yes.
And we would like for you to, our listeners,
I'm out.
time, she's not, bring your knitting and spend the
Well,
day.
and I didn't realize that part of when we were talking about like the organization that the North had, that again, they had seen a little bit of this from the Revolutionary War, and you can almost see the difference of 100 years. That one of the first things they do is they organize the United States Sanitary Commission, which I feel like they could have spent more time on the name.
Yeah.
Don't know why it was called the Sanitary Commission.
It sounds like sanitary napkins
Yeah, that's my immediate association.
or insane asylum.
Oh no, I'm not. I'm thinking of the Department of Sanitation
Yeah.
or sanitary napkins. Yeah. And it really wasn't either of those. It's been called kind of the forerunner of the American Red Cross. And basically, what they did was they had agents who would coordinate the gathering up of supplies. And the whole point of this was that individual towns weren't independently running their own relief organization. They were going in and saying, okay, this regiment needs this. And they were, in direct contact, but they were coordinate. And so they would have these meetings. They were using the local sewing circles, but they would have these meetings in the evenings that were also social, but designed to give women a place to knit socks and socialize and contribute to the war effort.
And that was interesting too, because it was the problem for the knitters wanting to have a connection to the soldiers. So they really probably wanted to knit for their own soldiers that were in the army. But by doing this in a more efficient way, collaborating, you didn't know who is getting what. And so they did find ways to put messages in their knitting. And one of them, I love this, she put in, "Brave sentry on your lonely beat, may these blue stockings warm your feet. And when from wars and camps you part, may some fair knitter warm your heart."
Isn't that the best? I just love that. There was another one too. And actually they did that on both sides. They did that in the South too, but they didn't have that kind of centralized thing. But this woman put, "Close by the old battleground in Lexington, Massachusetts, the birthplace of the liberty you are fighting so bravely to preserve for us, was this shirt made for you. The young lady who made it hopes that these sleeves will enclose two sound arms and that no serious wound confines you to the hospital."
Which was sort of ominous.
Yeah, hope you don't lose your arms there because I made these nice.
Yeah, made two sleeves.
Yeah, made two sleeves, not one. Come back with both of them.
Right.
And apparently, too, the troops sent back messages thanking the very, they knew where the stuff came from. And so
Right.
would send back a thank you note that was often read out loud at these meetings, and everybody would be inspired to knit faster.
I think we have to tell the song. There was a knitting song.
Yes, I wish we had the music for it.
I know. If somebody wants to come up with music for this. Should we take turns?
Yes. This was written by Albert M. Hubbard. He composed the knitting song dedicated to the patriotic ladies of the North. And it says it became a zesty tribute that quickly became a favorite with choral groups at fairs and parlor sing-alongs, and accounted for even further acceleration of knitting.
So here you go. Here's your inspiration. Okay. Knit, knit, knit for our northern soldiers brave.
Knit, 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 while the stars and stripes they wave, while they, the rebels in battle meet, be yours to fashion with fingers fleet, the nice warm socks for the weary feet. Knit, knit, knit.
For our boys on southern hills, our boys in southern vales, by the woods and streams of Dixieland, are feeling the wintry gales. Knit, knit, knit.
The socks and mittens and gloves. Knit, knit, knit.
Each one that our country loves, lay beside the useless, though beautiful toy with which you many an hour employ, and knit instead for the soldier boy. Knit,
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 knit.
knit.
Can't we get that
I mean, and they did knit mainly socks, but they knit a lot of other things. I loved what they said about the Afghan. This was an article of featuring items suitable for a gentleman, sent bargain hunters off to buy hand-knit Afghans with this bit of advice, quote, "What is called an Afghan would to the uninstructed mind appear, perhaps, as absurd an article as ever was devised for the use of man. Not so, however, to the few persons of enlightened intelligence. Few things, I am told, are more essential to a gentleman. In fact, life is a burden without one."
I've knit 12 Afghan squares and I need to sew them up. So I'm trying to use this as inspiration to sew up my Afghan squares.
It is to few persons of enlightened intelligence. Apparently, you are one of those people, but you
Right.
better get going on your Afghan.
Exactly.
And the other theme, in addition to socks, is children knitting, helping.
Yes.
What's that like?
Helpful children.
Helpful children. Yeah. So they have their own little organization, little sewing bees and things like that that they do. And then they also have women who are organizing basically fundraising fairs
Right.
to raise money. You know, you could bring household items you weren't using and sell them, and then the proceeds would go to the war effort. This was when they were selling things made of hair.
Right, which they were picture frames and the frames were hair. Like, ooh.
Yeah, but this was really big in the 19th century, and it comes with spiritualism and the idea that the other world has a material aspect. You know, it also comes out of the whole history of relics, saints' relics. I remember seeing the palm of Saint Francis of Assisi in Assisi with the hole where he's received the stigmata. So, I mean, it comes from the relics, but, and I remember too, do you remember the little locket with the
Yes.
picture of George Washington?
Yeah, and there was a lock of hair, which we assume was George Washington's hair, if you wanted to clone him.
Famous people, the hairs.
I
Yeah.
mean, really, that's kind of smart. Like, you could clone Grant because.
Yeah, and the women in the South were doing this too.
And that was funny. It turns out Grant had a lot of hair. Lee, not so much.
Yeah. Well, and it kind of reminds me of Napoleon's penis. Did you hear that story?
No, not heard that story.
Apparently, after Napoleon died, the doctor who was performing the autopsy cut off his penis and gave it to a Corsican priest. Somehow, it ended up in an exhibit in New York in the like 1920s. And people said it looked like a piece of jerky or buckskin shoelace.
God, why did they
But then it was purchased by a doctor, a urologist.
A urologist, of course. Who else would want?
So guess where Napoleon's penis is now, Bodhi? Guess.
In that museum in London for weird things.
That would be a good place. No, it spent a lot of time under the bed of the urologists in New Jersey.
New Jersey. Napoleon's penis is in New Jersey. When I went to New Orleans a few months ago, Napoleon apparently was going to be exiled there. I don't think he ever was, but there's a Napoleon's bar, and we went there and had a drink. It was kind of fun. That's a nice, yeah. But thankfully, his penis is not there. But I feel like it would be a little more appropriate in New Orleans than in New Jersey. Just saying.
Then I'm also trying to imagine. So then this urologist dies and bequeaths Napoleon's penis to his daughter.
Oh, no.
I don't know what happened after that. I think people made offers for $100,000 to buy it. But I think certain people should be made aware that penises despots can end up under a urologist's bed in New Jersey. I just think that ought to be
I agree.
Well known. But we digress. I don't know how we got from here.
Okay, so how are we going to transition from Napoleon's penis to knitting updates?
Oh, well, let me just finish the hair thing. Apparently, Queen Victoria had a number of pieces of jewelry made with the locks of Albert's hair. Yeah. So, I mean, this was a big thing in the 19th century. I just thought it was interesting that it came into play as a fundraising thing.
Yeah, I know that they had bracelets made out of hair that you just put like a metal clasp, but you'd have like a braid.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and there's a famous scene in Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights where Heathcliff sneaks in to Catherine, I think it is. Yeah. She's died, and he sneaks into her death chamber and he sees that her locket has a lock of Edgar's hair, and he takes it out and puts his own hair in because wants her to. And it's interesting, he's not taking a lock of her hair. He wants a part of him to be in the grave with her.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's what you get for actually reading the book instead of just watching the many movies about
it. You might miss that crucial, and I mean that bizarre sort of gothic scene. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
But we digress. But
I thought of a transition to knitting here.
Okay.
As we knit our dog and cat hairs.
Yes.
Into our knitting, you can think of that as a special homage to the Victorian era.
Yeah. Well, and I remember reading about how when they found people who had been thrown into the bogs, that their clothing survived, and it's sheep hair. I mean, sheep wool. And I think that was one of the reasons that I think they also did collect teeth too, but hair was particularly prized because there was a way that it kind of retained its color. And so there was a way that it was untouched by death and time in that way. And certainly that's why knitted garments survive as long as they do, because they're made of different kinds of hairs. So what? Are you knitting these days, Booty? How's your Sleeve Island projects coming?
Well, trumpet sound again. I have a finished object. It's my Kleine cardigan. So our maiden names were Klein, K-L-E-I-N, and this is K-L-E-I-N-E by Marie Green. And I just finished. It's a little damp still. But it's blocked and the ends are woven in.
Whoa.
So I wove them in right before.
Slow down with your bad self.
I know, right? So that one's done. And then I'm almost done one sleeve on my gold wing, and so at the end, there's a little color work, so that's a lot of fun.
I really like that gold wing sweater. I don't know if I've mentioned that to you before, but I really, really, really like it.
Bossy is trying to get me to give her my precious gold wing sweater. I'll be cold this winter, much like the soldiers in the Revolutionary War.
And the Civil War, yes.
And the Civil War. So, Bossy, what are you working on?
I'm still in bunny land, but I have progressed. I have put the bunny together. And again, this is like booty. Every time I start one of these, I think, okay, this time I'm going to really follow the directions. And so, first of all, I stuffed the head. And then I looked at the picture. And I thought, wow, the head on her bunnies looks a lot better. It's got kind of puffy cheeks. And then I realized there was a whole section of the directions that talks about how you make puffy cheeks. Mine looks like the head of a bullet. It just kind of shooting forward.
Yeah, mine always came out like bullets too. So apparently I missed those directions as well.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing is I thought, because I remember last time I sewed the head on the body and I don't know what I did, but I ended up having to take it off. And that was really hard to do. Once you buried those stitches, it's hard to find them. So I was determined not to do that again. But do you see what I did, Booty? Can you tell?
The head is just a little tilted. It's super cute, though.
It's askew. It's the askew bunny. But I'm not taking it off because I know that didn't end well last time.
I think it's just always looking at you like, oh,
like
that's interesting.
Huh. What?
Yeah.
What's that you say?
It's a good listening bunny.
It's a listening bunny. Yeah. But like, I can't sew a bunny head on straight to like save my life. I can't do it. I just, but it's fine.
It's adorable. I think, well, and the overalls are so cute.
I'm not sure if I made the overalls before, and I use this variegated yarn. I think you might have given me this variegated yarn. And I also did the little sock feet, but I think I might have to do the Mary Janes because those are just so cute. So,
yeah, they are adorable.
That's going to delay it. I have another one I want to make, though, and I'm thinking there's not as much of a time frame on that. I'm like, okay, I need to go right to bunny land again and actually do one and follow all of the directions and get a head that doesn't look like a bullet.
You remember when I talked about this way back in episode 2, that I use a head from a crochet pattern because it's just a ball. And I mean, you could also just like those Arnie and Carlos, those knitted balls, Christmas balls, you could just make a plain ball and instead of the bullet head.
I do like how this particular pattern, I don't have it with me. Who is this pattern?
The pattern is Bunny with a Striped Sweater by Julie Williams. It's published in Little Cotton Rabbits. There are a few different ways to do the bunny heads. It's basically the same shape, but like different patches.
I forget what this one is. Yeah, but it's in that same pattern that it's got a couple of different options for the face. And I like the one where the snout is kind of one color. So that's what I did. I think maybe it's like the Brer Rabbit or something like that. It's really cute. I mean, and she has such like the little pinafores. She's got little pockets with, and then you can put in, I don't think I'm going to do this, but you can put in a little baby bunny for the little stuffed bunny to carry around in her little pocket. And then she has other patterns for the socks and the shoes. She has trainers, sneakers.
Oh, it's called a Dutch bunny head.
A Dutch bunny head. That's what it is. Yeah. It's super cute. I mean, but it is, I mean, it's so small and yet it's so much work. Yeah.
All these things are.
Yeah. I'm thinking that we need to, given the sweep of American history and the dearth of socks that defines our nation's history, I'm thinking I might have to try knitting a pair of socks, which I've never done. Have you ever done that?
I have knit several pairs of socks. I haven't done a ton of socks, but I've started. They're very small. You're working with fingering weight yarn. I mean, obviously you could try knitting, well, slippers. I don't have a problem knitting slippers. I've knit Christmas stockings, which are basically the same idea. It's just that you make a much bigger object and you'll have to make one.
Well, that is what they talked about too, was that idea of you make one and you sort of get the hang of it, and then you make the second one, maybe your knitting's gotten a little looser, and then the second one doesn't match the first one.
Yeah, I know that Stephanie Perlmutter talks about how she loves to knit socks and she's always got a pair of socks or more on the needles. There, you can knit two at a time, you can knit toe up, top down. There's so many different ways of doing it. I can understand why two at a time would be nice because you'd be done at the same time. And she talks about how you've got the cuff. And then you have the magic of the turning of the heel and then the foot. So it's not as tedious as it seems knitting with fiddly needles because they're small and either you're knitting in the round or magic loop. It's still a little fiddly even with magic loop. And I feel like it's a long project.
But it was interesting that hands down, both sides preferred the hand knit socks over the store bought or hosiery.
And I mean, it's like I love fingering weight yarn in terms of you could get so many great colors. They're beautiful yarns that I love working with. I'm just something about socks. I would not have done well revolutionary times or Civil War times, especially, I'm assuming these stockings are white.
No, they're different. They're different colors, and of course, in the South, they're basically using whatever they have. But yeah,
I'm thinking like stockings.
right.
Yeah, that, no. No, thank you.
We say no thanks.
Thanks.
And we don't want Napoleon's penis either.
No.
Yeah, I don't want that. Yeah, I think I'm gonna go back. I'm maybe going to do my other bunny so that I can capitalize on the learning curve, which I never seem to do. I might have to try a sock though, just because I feel like I need to engage in a very direct way with this great historic phenomenon of dearth of socks. Have you put anything new? Have you cast on anything new though, since we last?
No, I'm still working on the mystery knit along shawl. Haven't made much progress on that since I'm rounding, since I finished the one sweater and I'm almost finished the sleeve on the other one. So I thought I would try to get those done or at least finish the one sleeve. I have thoughts of casting it on other things, but that list is very, very long.
Yeah, I think, Booty, we've come to the end. We've talked about balsamic onions. We've talked about hair bracelets and
Napoleon's penis.
Napoleon's penis and all of the knitting for socks on both sides, north and south. And I think it's time to say, whatever you do, don't
Don't
knit
knit
like
like
my
my
sister.
sister.
But do check out our website and feel free to subscribe if you want to support us.
Write us a review. Tell a friend.
Those are all great ways to let us know that you enjoy what we're doing. And thank you so much for listening.